Hi, this is Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online. At November's COP26 climate conference, countries met to generate stronger action on climate change. In attendance was Institut Talanoa's Nathalie Unterstel, a former Brazilian negotiator at climate summits. Unterstel talks to ASCOA Online's Luisa Lemme about what happened at COP26, what it means for Latin America, and what more Brazil, the region's biggest contributor to climate change, can do.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en foco.
América Latina en foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Nathalie, thank you so much for participating in our episode of Latin American Focus.
It's my pleasure, and well, happy to be with you after this long 2 weeks at Glasgow at COP26.
What were your goals in Glasgow this year?
I see COPs nowadays more as a landing point for a lot of, you know, policies and actions that are taking place outside. And at the same time, it is an important moment, an important place, because it can accelerate action outside. And that's precisely what the Paris Agreement is all about. It's about inducing more ambition, inducing more action outside. And this is what is actually happening since 2015, when the agreement was adopted. By then, we didn't have the necessary and the cheap and the mature technologies that we needed to decarbonize sectors of the global economy. And 6 years after, we know that what is happening with energy, with electricity, is expected to happen in other sectors of the economy during this decade. So in agriculture, land use, building, so on and so forth. And this is all about technological progress, exponential progress, combined with the alignment of flows of finance and investment and the public opinion. So, and diplomacy is still lagging behind, I must say, with what's happening in the real economy. So it was really great to go to Glasgow and see that maybe for the first time we have an outcome, the Glasgow Climate Pact, which not only reflects what is going on in the real world. So it talks about things that we never really spoke out, like fossil fuels and phasing out subsidies, but also about methane, which is something which is being worked out outside. And it recognizes the action taking place outside. And it brings governments on board saying, well, we have this 10 years to now nine years to really, you know, do our thing and try to put all the pieces together. So I think we have now a very different moment and a very different type of diplomatic task ahead of us.
People who are listening have read about the news coming out of COP26, the Paris Agreement framework, U.S. and China unexpectedly coming together and agreeing to accelerate the transition to a global net zero economy and, you know, a new international carbon market. Can you explain a little bit, Nathalie, about how does Latin America, and especially Brazil, fit into this context?
Let me go back just a little bit on what I think are the four major issues that were discussed at COP26. First, climate ambition. The second is the climate finance, especially the goal for the private sector, not only the public. The third is adaptation and loss and damage. And the fourth are these political deals on ending coal, fossil fuels, and deforestation. When you speak about climate ambition, it means that the national governmental plans and targets, if we sum them up, they should, you know, take us to 1.5 degrees. And currently, or before we got to COP26, they were taking us to this route of a 2.7 degrees of global warming. Right in the first day of COP26, countries like India and Nigeria, as well as others, they also came to the table with some new pledges. And so we started with a 2.4 degrees Celsius before us, which was a slight improvement, but still far away from the 1.5, right? And then came these mini deals or sectoral agreements. There were many, from ending deforestation by the end of this decade to reducing 30% of methane emissions. There were many agreements signed by different groups of countries. And these agreements, if they are fully implemented, they can mean a 1.8 scenario. And that's good. That's taking us really more into where we need to be. So I think that's an area where Latin American countries, especially the sectoral agreements, they were very active. Brazil signed both the methane and the end of deforestation by the end of this decade pledges. Of course, Brazil will have to incorporate that into its own NDC. But it was good to see Brazil coming out with that. It's normally not what Brazil does. Our diplomacy never, you know, get into this kind of mini deals. They prefer the multilateral processes.
You mentioned mini deals, but
yeah,
those are really significant commitments for Brazil, for example, right? The methane agreement is known as the burp of the cattle, right? Like, so
yeah.
The emissions of methane matter for Brazil's economy, basically, right?
One of the things that this deals with is precisely like the measurements. So many countries, including Brazil, they are using like very outdated methodologies to get to know their emissions. Brazil is actually using methodology from 2006, so it's quite old, and we could be using 2019 one. So it's going to be very important for us to move towards like the best available inventory methodology, as we say. And this will have huge implications because the more accurate our measurements are, the more we're going to know the size of this sector, you know, in our emissions. So it's quite probable that we are underestimating this currently, and that our targets then will have to be updated accordingly. So this is one of the things. The other is that, of course, this agenda or this pledge opens up a super big agenda for Brazil with a lot of opportunities, including like bringing more technologies into agriculture, into the field, which is something that our cattle ranchers are probably going to be very happy about. But I need to highlight the role and the leadership of Costa Rica. Costa Rica not only signed pledges, but it also led a very, very novel deal, which was the what we are calling the BOGA, the Beyond Oil and Gas Alliance, which basically it's this partnership or this platform where countries that have oil and gas reserves, like Costa Rica, together with other countries like Denmark, which is then a country which has been using fossil fuels for a long time. They established this platform saying with different levels of commitments, but basically saying we're going to work on the upstream. We're going to work on the production of these fossil fuels and make sure that the production will align with the carbon budget that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, has showed us that we have. And this means not exploring, not granting new licenses for oil and gas. This alliance is absolutely crucial because it's taking the social license of oil and gas. And so I need to highlight this here because it's good to see that in the region, there is this type of leadership. And of course, this means a lot to other countries like Mexico, Brazil, Venezuela, and others that are exploring this type of resources.
A lot of what was covered at COP 2016 was about financing financing developing countries to adapt their economies to pollute less, the creation of an international carbon market. Can you explain a little at what stage this issue is right now? Who is set to pay for revamping economies to reduce carbon emissions?
I actually don't agree that we should look at climate finance from the perspective of who's going to pay for that. And my disagreement is related to the fact that everybody, all economies in the world, they are going to have to do a transition. It's in their interest to do so. And if they don't, they're going to have to bear with the costs of inaction. So in Glasgow, we moved the needle from talking only about the quantity of finance to also talk about the quality of finance. And that was very important because many countries are highly indebted and they really need resources that are more accessible. They need to front load massive capital investment to really, in this decade, get to net zero. And one of the most interesting things that I saw there was this country-led platform that was designed for South Africa to move from coal to renewables. In the case of South Africa, $12.5 billion are going to be mobilized jointly by, you know, a pool of developed countries that are going to help also with technical expertise. This entails a lot of political leadership and expertise, but I think this can be replicated here in the region also for us to deal with our own problems. And it responds to this idea of not only talking about the quantity, but also about the quality of the finance and the purpose around this. And I think that's one of the things that I would like to see moving forward. Countries getting finance for a specific purpose and with very specific goals in mind. In our case, for sure, zeroing, ending deforestation. We saw this hundreds of financial institutions represented at the COP and committing to fasting the transition of their own portfolios. They committed to transition their portfolios of assets to net zero until 2050, meaning that in 30 years, less than 30 years, they're going to have to move out from fossil fuels, move out from, divest from deforestation-linked assets, and really shape the financial, the global financial system to be a net zero one. So it's a huge task, and it's good to see central banks, regulators, so all of the players from the system like trying to converge around this agenda, including in Latin America, including in Brazil.
I saw you posted on Twitter about the food in Glasgow and the state of your feet after so many days in the hallways of this event. Can you tell me what it's like to be there? Is there a moment, let's say, that crystallized something about this process for you?
So being at COP26 was a lot about not eating very well, I must say. Sorry, Scott, but the food was really not my type of food. It's an overwhelming experience, but also very rewarding. And one moment that was very rewarding to me was to be in this so-called Brazil Climate Action Hub, which was a pavilion put together by Brazilian civil society and private actors and governors. So they all came together to set up this pavilion. And I was there and I was participating on this session where we had like leaders from favelas, from Brazil, the only indigenous representative that we have at our Congress, Joênia Wapichana, also the CEO of JBS, and, you know, governor of state of Rio Grande do Sul. So this mix of very, very different people together, people that certainly do not agree in a lot of things, but that were there and were talking everybody was talking about the same thing, which is how do we do the transition in Brazil and how do we do it this decade? So it was very, the spirits were high and everybody, despite all of the challenges, all of the difficulties, they had their eyes on the negotiations and at the same time they had their foot on the ground.
That's amazing. You know, you commented about the gap between the people inside negotiation rooms and the people protesting outside, and even the people that are, as you said, on those pavilions that are, you know, happening around the negotiation rooms. What's the gap between the two, and what does it mean for policy?
Look, Brazil was clearly divided at COP26. We had the Brazilian delegation with more than 400 representatives, mostly from the government, the federal government. There was allegedly a bartender in that delegation as well. I don't know. I haven't seen that guy around. But that was the face, the more official face shown by Brazil there. And on the other hand, there was this other public face from people from, you know, the front lines that got together there and that were very much aligned in terms of what Brazil can achieve during this decade. So not within the current political cycle, not under this presidency, but, you know, visions for a Brazil that is much larger than Bolsonaro's government. And the clear divide was also interesting because there some dynamics played out. So I think the fact that we had so many Brazilians in the second group there and that they were so diverse really helped to minimize and control damage. So when we got to COP25 in Madrid, there were also this divide, but, you know, the government went there with a very harsh tone, with an agenda that was not very cooperative. And, you know, we left Madrid as the villain of the COP, the country that veto and block Article 6 negotiations, so on and so forth. And at least this time, you know, there was a balance. And I think therefore, it was a sort of victory for civil society to see that the government had to, you know, shift the tone over there. And that was the case for Article 6. So Brazil came as a very flexible negotiator. It had to concede much more to play together with other parties. And the end result was a pretty good one.
When we started thinking of this episode for the podcast, we chatted about how some places in the world are highly affected and by their sense of urgency, and then the position of large economies is still slowly negotiating, right? You were talking about ambition just now. How does Brazil fit in this divide in climate negotiations? Is Brazil David or Goliath here?
Brazil is one of the major emitters, not the likes of China and the US, which are responsible for 20% currently or historically, respectively. But Brazil is considered one of the five countries that contributed the most if we take into account the emissions from the agriculture, land use, and forestry. And so when we do have a responsibility, and at the same time, our current emissions are really, really high. We are emitting more than 2 gigatons, so more than 2 billion tons of CO2 per year. Only, if I'm not wrong, only 7 countries emit more than 1 billion a year. And it's important to say that because, of course, we are a developing economy. We do have a lot of developmental problems, including high inequality, poverty. You tell me, there are so many challenges, right? And decarbonization in our case, on the other hand, it's not a problem. It is actually a solution because we are one of the few countries that can achieve a fast decarbonization by radically reducing deforestation at a low cost, and at the same time, including the population and really not depending on, you know, disruptive technologies to do that. So we have a lot of advantages, but we have to be very strategic and use that.
The government is very hopeful about the international carbon market that has been established in this conference. Why you're not so excited about that as other people might be?
Well, I'm excited about Article 6. I'm glad it's finally finalized. The issue now is that what was decided in Glasgow were the criteria for the participation in this market mechanisms. And among this criteria, we have that countries willing to join these markets, they will have one to have established ambitious and progressive NDCs. And unfortunately, Brazil has not established a progressive NDC so far. We had one target established in 2015, which aims to bring us to 2030 with a level of 1.2 gigatons of emissions. And last year, we presented, and this year, has been allegedly updated. The numbers have not been released yet, but they will take us to the same level. So there were no progression. And today, if this market was already in place and running, Brazil would not be part of it. So we need to update. We need to comply with the Paris Agreement to start with. Secondly, in order to be a participant, a country has to achieve its NDC. And the results shown under Bolsonaro government are very, very bad, in especially in relation to deforestation in the Amazon region. We had, on average, more than 10,000 square kilometers of deforestation for the past 3 years. And this means that probably we would not be able to achieve the targets that were set forth, even if they have not been set as ambitious ones. And finally, in order to be a player, countries will have to set their governance arrangements. And this is another area where the current government is not very strong at. So we do not have a climate governance in place, so no robust arrangements. And for these reasons, I think Brazil has still a long way ahead of it, a long way ahead in terms of establishing itself as a player in this market. It's very unlikely that the Bolsonaro government will have the time, the political willingness, and the people to actually set up and actually update these three areas within this political cycle.
Can you talk about other countries in Latin America, which, by the way, not only very affected by climate change, but also very affected by the recent COVID-19 pandemic, eager to recover its economy? Can you talk about what other countries are doing good work when it comes to adapting their economy and meeting those type of criteria that you were mentioning to participate in carbon markets?
So Colombia is trying really hard to position itself in this ecosystem of countries and actors that are willing to tackle deforestation and at the same time to share the costs of doing so with the international community. So Colombia was really at the forefront of establishing deals with other nations, signing pledges, and it is also somehow occupying the space that was left out or left by Brazil under Bolsonaro government. So Colombia is really eager to show that there are countries in the pan-Amazon region willing to control deforestation and also to work on restoration.
We're talking a lot about the COP, but you actually walked the hallways of federal government buildings in Brasilia recently to deliver a proposal of climate policy to Brazil's federal government. Can you talk a bit about this climate and development platform and why it shows that Brazil has actually a very big potential to grow its economy through this climate adaptation?
So we invited 300 actors 150 of them being climate experts and the rest political leaders, community leaders, indigenous leaders, including governors, mayors, CEOs of big companies, as well as investors, to come together and discuss what climate ambition should look like in Brazil until the end of this decade. And backed by heavy economic modeling, a lot of scenarios were discussed by this large group of stakeholders. And we came to realize that actually Brazil does not need to sacrifice its economy nor its environment to get to 2030 with a quite high level of emissions cuts. We're talking about a reduction of 66% by 2030, which means getting to a level of 0.9 gigatons of emissions if we do three things. If we put a price on carbon domestically, if we reduce deforestation and invest in forest restoration. But when we convened the actors and showed this, which was already a great improvement in relation to what Brazil is currently proposing in terms of its NDC, most of the actors said, right, this is good, but actually it will not solve our major problem, which is deforestation in the Amazon. So this is what we want to do. So let's also have a scenario which is going to be much more ambitious, but where we're going to see, you know, the numbers with zero deforestation by 2030. So we did that. And of course, that's not only about, you know, pushing a button and just seeing how the models play out, but we got to 82% of reductions, meaning that Brazil can get to 2030 at a level of 0.5 gigatons. And both scenarios, they were really surprising because they did not harm our economy. Actually, GDP and income, they go slightly above of a reference scenario. And also, we understood that by pricing carbon, the government will have some revenues that can be redirected, for instance, for the poorer classes. And with that, we can even like work, you know, around fighting inequality. So anyhow, we put this proposal together and we included a lot of policy options so that our policy packages associated with the two scenarios, which are not different scenarios. They are just like levels of ambition. One is the minimal ambition and the other is what we are actually looking for. And, you know, we had this 300 actors lining up saying, this is what we want. We are ready to implement that. And we presented to the government. We presented to the Ministry of the Economy, also to Congress. And it was really heartwarming to see that Brazilians are really eager to do that. And I'm not talking about next year or, you know, only this government. It's really about a long-term agenda that everybody wants to see.
That's incredible. What kind of sector, if you think about sectors of the economy in Brazil, would benefit from those proposals?
So many of them, and actually it's good that you ask because I forgot to mention that the scenarios, they showed us that we would have at least the generation of more than 120,000 new jobs. And this is there in the area of energy, in the area of transportation, but also in the waste and sanitation sectors as well. So these are some of those. And of course, agriculture. Agriculture has a lot to gain with modernization and, of course, with the end of deforestation. This is going to really help our exports and, of course, can also increase the quality of jobs in the fields. And it's important to say also that what everybody is eager to see is not only a transition of sources of energy. It's really about the transition of investments, a transition of jobs, so as a transition of a mindset as well, and one that will certainly qualify to make our development model much better and much more rewarding to everybody.
we know that we need to measure some things differently. We need to finance better. Like you explained, what are we missing, Natalie? What is the piece of this puzzle that is missing for us to be able to launch more adaptation and to put this plan more into a reality?
I think velocity, because the pieces are there, the elements are covered, including from the private sector. But now it's a matter of how fast we're going to move. We don't have time. The IPCC was very clear that we have to slash emissions by half in 2030, and then by half in 2040, so on and so forth, so that we get to 2050 with more or less net zero emissions. So, and that means that it's not only about pledges and announcements or, you know, niceties. It's really about getting things done. This will entail not only then, you know, the governments acting, the private sector, especially the financial community, like doing what they say they're going to do, but also the activists, the civil society, the citizens, really pushing for it. We really need now a very strong pressure all over the places to, you know, move this agenda much faster than it's currently moving. Our goal is to try to stabilize that concentration at that level, 1.5 and nothing more.
That's great. I am eager to talk with you again, Natalie, to learn more about these issues and for us to debrief whatever of those deals is being pushed forward. So thank you so much for participating in this episode of Latin American Focus.
Thank you so much. It's been my great pleasure. And for sure, we're gonna talk again, because this is the decade. We are the generation. We got to do it. We're going to do it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zussis. This podcast was produced by Luisa Lemmy and Chase Harrison. The music in this episode was recorded at America Society in New York City. For more about upcoming concerts online, visit musicoftheamericas.org. We hope you enjoyed this episode. You can help us spread the word by giving us 5 stars, writing a review, and sharing at Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.